Hannah smiled as she realized that Norman had correctly interpreted her ambiguous question. "You knew exactly what I was asking, didn't you?" she said, and it was a statement rather than a question.
"Yes. I could see that it bothered you the entire time Andrea was here. You were listening to her, but you were thinking about what Doug Grierson told you."
"You're right," Hannah admitted, mixing the ingredients for the crust. Once the crust had been thoroughly mixed, she removed enough of the sweet dough for the crumble topping, wrapped it in plastic wrap, and stuck it in the walk-in cooler. Then she filled the bottoms of the pans she'd prepared with the remaining sweet dough, smoothed out the bottom crusts with the blade of a metal spatula, and slipped the pans onto the shelves in her industrial oven. She closed the oven door, set the timer, and came back to the workstation to join Norman.
"Do you think he's coming back?" she asked.
Norman made a helpless gesture.
"I really don't know, Hannah. Some things seem to point to it, and others don't."
"It's so frustrating. Sometimes I think..."
The rest of her sentence was interrupted by an authoritative knock on the back kitchen door.
"Mike's here," Norman said, recognizing the knock.
"I know. I'll let him in."
"You have to tell him about the bank, Hannah."
Hannah gave a little sigh.
"I know,"
she said as she walked toward the door to open it for Mike.
"He did what?"
Mike stared at Hannah in shock.
"He signed everything over to me the day he left town. It's a lot of money, Mike."
Hannah drew the printout Doug had given her from her purse and handed it to Mike.
"See?"
Mike examined the printout.
"Yes. This puts a different light on things, Hannah. We may have been looking for Ross in all the wrong places."
"What do you mean?"
"I need to find out if he withdrew any large sums of money. You say that you co-signed on all these accounts?"
"That's right. Doug told me that Ross wanted me to have full access to everything."
"Good. That'll save us a lot of time. I need you to go to the bank with me, Hannah."
"But I can't go now. I have bar cookies in the oven."
"How soon will they be baked?"
Hannah glanced at the clock.
"I should be through in a little less than an hour."
"Okay, that'll do."
Mike picked up his coffee and stood up.
"I'm going back out to the cruiser. I have to check in with my detectives in the field, and then I'll give Doug a call. I need to tell him that we're coming in. I have to find out if there's any paperwork he needs from me."
When Mike had left, Hannah turned to Norman.
"Do you have any idea why Mike needs me to go with him?"
"I think so. You co-signed on Ross's accounts, and you can request information on deposits and withdrawals. Mike can't do that unless he gets a court order from a judge."
"But if I request those deposits and withdrawals, I can give the information to Mike so he can have it right away? And then Mike will know if Ross withdrew any large sums of money right before he left?"
"That's right."
"I get it now. And of course I'll cooperate. It just confused me when Mike said he could have been looking for Ross in all the wrong places."
"That puzzled me, too, until Mike said he needed to take you to the bank. I think he needs to know how much cash Ross took with him, and whether Ross gave Doug any clue about how he was going to use the money."
"But how could Ross give Doug a clue about..."
Hannah stopped speaking for a brief moment, and then the answer popped into her mind.
"Traveler's checks.
If Ross bought traveler's checks, that might indicate he was planning to go to a place where he didn't want to carry a lot of cash."
"Exactly.
And Ross may have asked about foreign currency. That would give Mike a clue.
Mike's hoping something Doug tells him or something he sees on the bank records will point him in the right direction." The timer buzzed, and Hannah got up to take the pans of sweet dough crust from the oven. She slipped them on the baker's racks to cool and went back to prepare her strawberry filling. Once that was done and the crust had sufficiently cooled, she spread the filling on them, sprinkled it with sea salt, and topped it with crumbles of the refrigerated sweet dough.
"I'm almost done," Hannah said as she put the last pan of sweet and salty strawberry bar cookies in the oven. These will be baked in less than 30 minutes, and then I can go to the bank with Mike.
You can go now, Norman told her. Just set the timer, and I'll take the pans out of the oven and put them on the racks.
Really? Hannah asked.
No problem. Norman started to grin. I've watched you enough times to know what to do. It's not complicated. All I have to do is pull them out of the oven. And after all, Hannah, I'm a dentist.
Hannah stared at him for a moment. What's that got to do with it? She asked.
Dentists are really good at extractions.
Hannah groaned, and then she laughed.
You really reached for that joke. Maybe, but you laughed.
That's true, Hannah admitted. Are you sure you can stay long enough to finish the baking for me?
I'm sure. Doc Bennett's filling in for me for the rest of the day, and the only thing I have waiting for me at the clinic is some boring paperwork. When Michelle comes back and you two are finished baking for the day, we'll all go out for that dinner I promised you.
Thank you, Norman, Hannah said, patting his shoulder before she slipped on her parka. I'll go tell Mike we can leave now, and I'll be back just as soon as I can.
No hurry, Norman called after her.
Hannah thought about Norman and how much she liked him as she opened the door. She stepped out into the cold winter air and realized once again how lucky she was to have a best friend like Norman. Sweet and Salty Strawberry Bar Cookies. Preheat oven to 325 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. The crust and topping. 2 cups, 4 sticks, 16 ounces, 1 pound, salted butter, softened to room temperature. 1 cup white granulated sugar. 1.5 cups powdered confectioner's sugar. 2 teaspoons vanilla extract. 4 cups all-purpose flour. Pack it down in the cup when you measure it. The strawberry filling. 11.75-ounce jar, net weight, strawberry ice cream topping or preserves. 1 cup, 6 ounce by weight package, white chocolate or vanilla chips. 1/8 cup, 2 tablespoons, whipping cream. 1/2 teaspoon vanilla extract. 2 teaspoons sea or kosher salt, the coarse ground kind. Before you begin to make the crust and filling, spray a 9-inch by 13-inch cake pan with PAM or another nonstick baking spray. Hannah's first note. This crust and filling is a lot easier to make with an electric mixer. You can do it by hand, but it will take some muscle. Combine the butter, white sugar, and powdered sugar in a large bowl or in the bowl of an electric mixer. Beat at medium speed until the mixture is light and creamy. Add the vanilla extract. Mix it in until it is thoroughly combined. Add the flour in half-cup increments, beating at low speed after each addition. Beat until everything is combined. Hannah's second note. When you've mixed in the flour, the resulting sweet dough will be soft. Don't worry. That's the way it's supposed to be. Remove the bowl from the mixer. With impeccably clean hands, take out a generous cup of the sweet dough, form it into a loose ball, and wrap it in plastic wrap. Stick that sweet dough ball in the refrigerator to chill. You will use this chilled sweet dough for your top crumble crust. Again, with impeccably clean hands, press the rest of the sweet dough into the bottom of your prepared cake pan. If the dough seems a bit sticky, cover the dough with a sheet of waxed paper to use when you press it down. This will form a bottom crust. Press it all the way out to the edges of the pan, as evenly as you can, to cover the entire bottom. Then remove the wax paper if you used it. Bake your bottom crust at 325 degrees Fahrenheit for approximately 20 minutes. While the crust is baking, take the lid off your strawberry topping and place the jar in the microwave. Heat on high for 20 seconds. Leave the jar in the microwave for 1 minute, and then take it out. Pour the slightly heated strawberry topping in a microwave-safe bowl on the counter. I used a 4-cup Pyrex measuring cup. Use a rubber spatula to get all the strawberry topping out of the jar. When the edges of your crust have turned pale golden brown, Remove the pan from the oven, but don't shut off the oven. Set the pan with your baked crust on a cold stovetop burner or a wire rack to cool. It should cool approximately 15 minutes. After your crust has cooled, it's time to finish making your strawberry filling. Add the cup of white chocolate or vanilla chips to the bowl with the strawberry topping. Mix them in with the rubber spatula. Measure out 1/8 cup whipping cream and add that to your microwave-safe bowl. Mix it in with the rubber spatula. Place the bowl in the microwave and heat the strawberry filling for 1 minute at high power. Let the bowl sit in the microwave for an additional minute, and then try to stir the mixture smooth with a heat-resistant spatula or a wooden spoon. If you cannot stir it smooth, heat it for an additional 20 seconds at high power. Let it sit in the microwave for an equal length of time, and then try again. Repeat as often as necessary, alternating heating and standing times until the chips are melted. Once your strawberry filling is ready, add the 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract and stir it in. Do not add the salt yet. Pour the strawberry filling over the baked crust in the pan as evenly as you can. Smooth it out with the rubber spatula. Here comes the salt. Sprinkle the sea salt or kosher salt over the strawberry filling in the pan. Take the remaining sweet dough out of the refrigerator and unwrap it. It has been refrigerated for 35 minutes or more, and it should be thoroughly chilled. With your impeccably clean fingers, crumble the dough over the strawberry filling as evenly as you can, letting some of the strawberry filling peek through. Return the pan to the oven and bake at 325 degrees Fahrenheit for 25 to 30 additional minutes, or until the strawberry filling is bubbly and the crumble crust is light golden brown. Take your pan of bar cookies out of the oven, shut off the oven, and place the pan on a wire rack to cool completely. Hannah's third note: do not be tempted to cut your sweet and salty strawberry bar cookies until they are completely cool. That strawberry filling will stay hot and molten for at least 20 to 30 minutes. When your bar cookies are completely cool, cut them into brownie-sized pieces, place them on a pretty plate, and serve them to your guests. If you want to make them even prettier, add a few fresh strawberries around the edge of the plate. Chapter 15. Hannah and Mike sat in front of Doug Grierson's desk. She was sipping a cup of peppermint tea, something she usually didn't drink, but the butterflies in her stomach had been startled into flight by her fear that Ross might have done something illegal to have accumulated so much money. Mike put down his cup of espresso and locked eyes with Doug. Hannah could tell that he was frustrated.
"Why didn't you call to tell me this when Ross didn't come back to town?"
Doug made a helpless gesture. "Number one, you didn't ask me. And number two, there's an issue of confidentiality here, and federal regulations apply. I have to file a report if anyone deposits over $10,000 in currency, but not if they withdraw large sums. If I called you every time one of our customers made a large deposit or took out a large sum of money, I wouldn't be a banker in this town for long."
Mike didn't look happy, but he nodded.
"Okay, you're right."
Doug turned to look at Hannah.
"Besides, I thought Hannah would tell you when she reconciled her bank statement. That deposit was listed on her statement."
Hannah couldn't help feeling horribly guilty. "I'm sorry, Doug. I didn't even look at it when it came. I just put it on my desk to take care of when I had the time."
Doug sighed.
"I know you keep a running balance, Hannah, but you should at least look at your statement every month. If you think there's a discrepancy, we want to know immediately."
"You're right, Doug," Hannah admitted. "I promise I'll do that when I get next month's statement."
"Statements," Doug corrected her with the plural. "You'll get a statement for your personal checking, your corporate account, and the 3 accounts you share with Ross. There are some large sums involved,
and it would be best if you showed more fiscal responsibility. If you need any help handling things, I'll be glad to be of assistance.
I promise I'll take care of it, but thank you, Doug.
Hannah was embarrassed, and she turned to Mike to change the subject.
Did you find anything helpful in the printouts Doug gave you?
Yes, Mike said, giving her hand a squeeze before he switched his attention to Doug. I need to know if Ross made his last withdrawals in cash.
Just a moment, Mike, Doug addressed Hannah. Do I have your permission to discuss this, Hannah?
Yes, Hannah answered quickly.
All right, then. Ross wanted the cash in bills no larger than 20s and 50s. Normally, we don't keep that much cash on hand. There's no call for it. But we always start ordering more cash at the end of May and at the end of November.
Hannah was puzzled. Why then?
People want new, crisp bills for graduation presents and Christmas gifts. You'd be surprised at how many bills are requested over the holidays, especially after John Walker started to carry graduation and Christmas cards that have slots to hold cash at his drugstore.
I remember getting a card from my aunt with little slots on a Christmas tree, Mike said with a smile. It held dimes, and it was so heavy she had to put 3 stamps on the envelope.
Doug laughed. It's quarters now, Mike, and they're even heavier. Bills are the way to go if you're mailing a cash card.
So you had the amount of cash that Ross wanted on hand? Hannah asked, attempting to keep them from getting sidetracked.
Yes, we did. The armored truck had just delivered that morning, and I went to the vault to get what Ross needed.
Did Ross buy any traveler's checks while he was here at the bank? Hannah asked.
The moment the question left her mouth, Mike turned to her with a smile.
No, I get a record of traveler's checks sold every week, and there were none that week.
Did Ross exchange any money for foreign currency? Mike asked.
No, I get a record of that, too.
Doug reached into his center desk drawer, drew out a small padded envelope, and handed it to Hannah.
I'm sorry I forgot to give this to you earlier. Ross left it for you. I'm really not supposed to hand-deliver anything in a sealed envelope from one customer to another customer, but if you'll open it in front of me so that I can see the contents are nothing illegal, that'll satisfy our internal bank regulations.
Hannah's hands were shaking slightly as she opened the envelope. Was it a note from Ross, explaining why he'd left? She was almost afraid to see what he'd left for her, but she steadied herself and looked inside.
What is it? Mike asked.
2 keys on a keyring, Hannah answered, shaking them out of the envelope and onto the blotter on Doug's desk. That's all. There's nothing else in the envelope.
There's a tag with a number on it, Mike pointed out. 137.
Do you mind if I pick them up? Doug asked Hannah.
No, go ahead. I know I've seen keys like that before, but I can't quite place them.
They're safe deposit keys, Doug told her. Did Ross have a safe deposit box? Mike asked him.
I'll check. Give me a moment and help yourself to more coffee while you're waiting. I'll be right back.
Both Hannah and Mike sat there and waited, each thinking their own private thoughts. Hannah was wondering why Ross had left her the keys to his safe deposit box. Did that mean he was never coming back to Lake Eden and to her? Was he gone forever? And if Doug was right about the keys, what was in Ross's safe deposit box? And would she be allowed to use the keys to find out? Or was there some banking regulation making that illegal? Hannah took a deep breath, told herself to think positive thoughts about this new revelation, and turned to Mike.
What do you think this means? She asked him.
The envelope with his keys?
Yes. Does this mean that he's not planning to come back?
Mike reached out for her hand again.
I don't know, Hannah. Maybe it's just a precaution.
A precaution against what?
Mike was silent for a moment, and Hannah could tell he was thinking. Then he gave her hand a little pat, let it go, and spoke again.
A precaution against loss. Or maybe against someone taking the keys against his will.
But why would Ross be afraid that someone would...
Hannah stopped speaking as the door to the office opened and Doug came back in.
Lydia checked the records. Ross's safe deposit box is here, and it's number 137. As a matter of fact, she wrote out the receipt for him when he rented the box.
Hannah was almost afraid to ask, but she had to know.
Can I get into Ross's box?
Yes. Our bank has a self-service system for our safety deposit boxes. In other banks, a teller has to pull a signature card, check the customer's identification to make sure he or she is the customer who signed the card, let the customer into a secure area, and use the bank key and the customer's key to unlock the door that secures the box inside the vault. Once the box is removed from the vault, the teller carries it to a private room in the secured area and leaves. Then the customer lifts the lid on the box and either adds to, reviews, or removes the desired contents. When this is accomplished, the customer pushes a buzzer to summon the teller. The teller carries the box to the vault and replaces it, and the door is closed and relocked with both keys. No customer can get into his or her safety deposit box without the bank key. And no bank employee can get into the customer's safety deposit box without the customer's key. It's a very secure system.
It certainly sounds like it, Hannah agreed. But you don't have that system here?
No. We only have two full-time tellers and one part-time teller who comes in on busy bank days like Mondays, Fridays, and the first day and the last day of the month, if those days don't happen to fall on a Monday or a Friday. The system I just described to you is labor-intensive, and we don't have the personnel to do it. When I became bank president, we decided to remodel and use the self-service system.
Is that why Ross had two keys? Hannah asked.
Yes. The safe deposit area is in the annex we built. It's in the back, right next to the employee break room. The customer uses one key to open the door, locks it behind him or her, and uses the other key to unlock the safe deposit box. There are two offices for our safe deposit box holders to use, again, with locking doors. The customer uses one of them, completes whatever he or she came to do, carries the box back to the vault, and secures it behind the locked door. "Is the annex open at night?" Mike asked.
No, it's only available during banking hours, and no one without a key can get in the door. The biggest advantage of the self-service system for a bank is that the bank is absolved of all responsibility for checking identification against signature cards, unlocking and relocking boxes with the bank key, and letting customers into the vault area.
That makes sense to me, Mike said, giving a quick nod.
It made sense to the board, too, Doug told him.
Hannah began to frown.
But that means anyone with both keys can get into the annex and remove a safe deposit box.
Doug shook his head.
Not so, Hannah. The box number is not stamped on the keys, and neither is the bank name. You'd have to know both of those things before you could go to the right bank and open the right box. It's one of the reasons why we write the box number on the receipt for the rental, but nowhere else.
But there was a tag on Ross's keys with the box number, Hannah pointed out.
The bank doesn't put a tag on the keys, so Ross must have added that tag specifically for you before he put them in the envelope.
Mike leaned forward, and Hannah knew he had an important question to ask.
Does this solve the inheritance problem with safe deposit boxes and access for someone who's not on the signature card?
Yes.
If you have both keys and you know the bank and box number, you have access during banking hours. It's that simple.
Hannah started to smile. She knew precisely why Mike had asked that question.
Then I could take someone with me when I looked inside Ross's box?
Doug nodded.
Anyone of your choice, Hannah. It's all up to you.
Mike, Hannah turned to him, will you please look inside Ross's box with me?
Of course, Mike said, and he rose from his chair. I was hoping you'd ask me that.
Both Mike and Hannah were speechless as they stared down at Ross's open safe deposit box. They gazed at each other in shock for what was probably only a brief moment, but seemed like an eternity to Hannah.
More money, she said.
Yeah, a lot of it.
How? Hannah stopped to draw another shaky breath. How much money do you think is there?
I'm not sure. Mike gave a little humorless laugh. I've never seen that much money in one place before.
Hannah blinked and continued to stare down at the stacks of bills.
It's got white tape on it. Does that mean somebody counted it?
Mike leaned down to read the inscription on the white band that was wrapped around one of the stacks. When he straightened up again, he made a sound that was halfway between a gasp and a chuckle.
It says $10,000, Hannah.
Ross put $10,000 in his safe deposit box?
No. Try 10 times that, Hannah. There's $100,000 in this box.
Both of them just stared at the contents for a moment longer, and then Hannah drew a deep, shuddering breath.
Do you think that Ross left all this money for me?
No question about it. Ross's intentions were clear when he put his keys in that envelope and asked Doug to give it to you the next time you came to the bank. He even attached the tag with his safe deposit box number. He was alive and well when he did that. And that's enough to prove that he wanted you to have it. It's every bit as clear as if he'd taken the time to draw up a will.
He was alive and well when he did that. The words echoed in Hannah's mind, and she could feel her head start to spin. Did Mike believe that Ross was no longer alive and well? She didn't want to think about that. Not now. It was too much to handle, too frightening to contemplate. Instead, she sat down in the chair in front of the desk holding the safe deposit box and attempted to concentrate on the problem at hand.
"Are you okay, Hannah?" Mike asked her.
Yes, Hannah said firmly. And surprisingly, once the affirmation had left her lips, she was okay.
Ross gave Doug those signature cards for me to sign. Why didn't he just open his safe deposit box and deposit this money in one of his accounts?
Mike sighed, and it was clear that he didn't want to answer her question.
I don't know, Hannah. You'd have to ask him.
I can't ask Ross if he's not here and I don't know how to contact him. You know that.
Hannah could feel herself getting irritated with Mike for avoiding the intent of her question.
Let me rephrase that, she said, trying not to sound as frustrated as she felt. What possible reasons could someone have for putting $100,000 in cash in his safe deposit box when he could have deposited it in one of his bank accounts?
Mike looked very uncomfortable.
Well, perhaps he couldn't have deposited it in one of his accounts. At least, not all of it at once. You heard Doug tell us that he was obligated to file a report if someone deposited over $10,000 in cash.
I know what Doug said, but why didn't Ross deposit $5,000 at a time?
I don't know.
Think of a reason, Mike. You're the detective.
Mike reached out to put his hand on her shoulders.
Calm down, Hannah. I can tell you're stressed to the max.
I am, Hannah admitted and took a deep breath. Let's start again.
What reason would someone have to put $100,000 in bills in a safe deposit box?
Well, he could have wanted to hide it from someone.
Who?
There's no way of knowing that, but some people use safe deposit boxes to hide assets from a spouse.
But I'm his spouse, and Ross left me the keys. If he'd wanted to hide it from me, he wouldn't have done that. Give me some other possible reasons.
Perhaps he didn't want to deposit it for some reason.
Hannah gave an exasperated sigh. I know that, but why didn't he want to deposit it?
Well, there's the $10,000 cash limit. The reason it's there is to prevent drug dealers and criminals from banking the profits of their crimes.
I already thought of drug money, but what other crimes are you talking about?
There's extortion. This money could be extorted from someone. Or it could be the ransom from a kidnapping or bank robbery, and the perp doesn't know if the bills are marked or not. It could also be counterfeit, and whoever put it in the safe deposit box wants to hide it and pass it off one bill by one to avoid detection.
So it could be dirty money or counterfeit money. Is that right?
That's right.
Hannah was silent for a moment, thinking it over. Can you tell if this money is counterfeit?
No. I can give you a guess, but that's about it.
What's your guess?
A couple of bills on the tops of the stacks look worn, and that makes me think that they at least are legitimate. But that's just my gut feeling, Hannah. I really don't know.
Who would know if they're a counterfeit?
I'm not sure, but I'll find out. I have a friend in the Treasury Department, and I'll give him a call at home tonight. He's a good guy, and he'll put me in touch with someone who knows.
Thanks, Mike. Hannah's mind was spinning with possibilities, and she latched on to one. Would a bank robber be able to hide the money he stole in a safe deposit box?
Yes. Under certain circumstances, if he had the proper identification, he could go to any bank and rent a safe deposit box. Then he could carry the money in, concealed in some kind of briefcase or travel bag, and put it in his box.
And no one would know? Mike shook his head.
Once you rent a safe deposit box, you're given privacy to open it and put in anything that'll fit. It's just like when you used your keys to retrieve Ross's box. No one from the bank can get in without you, and they leave you in privacy so that you're alone when you have access to the box. It's even easier with the kind of safe deposit boxes that Doug has here. No one even has to check your identification once you've rented the box.
Hannah could feel her frustration beginning to grow again. So what you're telling me is that we really don't know anything about this money. She gestured to the stack of bills. It could have come from anywhere.
That's right. Of course, if this money is either counterfeit or from an illegal source, the person who tries to use it takes the risk of being apprehended.
Hannah thought about that for a moment. Yes. And I certainly want to find out if that's the case. She bent closer to look at the stacks of bills again and gave a little gasp as she spied something. What's that?
What's what?
There's something shiny under that third stack of bills. She pointed to the shiny object she'd noticed. It's rounded on top, and it looks like the edge of a coin. Mike moved closer and leaned down to look.
I see it. It's something silver. Hold on a second, and I'll get it out so we can find out exactly what it is. Do you have a nail file or anything thin, flat, and pointed in your purse?
I'm not sure. Let me look. Hannah set her saddlebag-sized purse on the top of the desk and rummaged inside. 11 pens, a paperback book she'd been meaning to read in her spare time, and a very old tin of breath mints later, she found something that met Mike's parameters. How about this? She asked, holding up a rat-tail comb she'd dropped in her purse for Andrea when her sister's dress purse was too tiny to hold it.
Perfect, Mike said, taking the comb. It should work.
Hannah watched as Mike inserted the tip of the comb under the stack of bills and poked against the object until it emerged from the other side. He shoved it out into the open area of the box without ever touching the contents of the box with his fingers.
It's a key, Hannah said, recognizing the shape immediately. She started to reach for it, but Mike grabbed her hand.
Leave it there, Hannah, he told her. We'll get it out without touching the inside of the box.
How?
Do you have tweezers in that big purse of yours? That would do. Or maybe a pair of scissors?
Hannah turned back to her open purse and began to search. There were no tweezers and no scissors that she could locate, but there was a set of chopsticks.
How about this? She asked, handing the paper-wrapped packet to Mike.
Mike drew the chopsticks out of the packet and began to smile.
I'm pretty good with chopsticks, so let me give it a whirl. It'll be tricky, but I think I can do it.
Hannah watched in fascination as Mike used the wooden chopsticks to lift the key and deposit it on top of the desk.
Can we touch it now? She asked him.
Yes. It's just the money that I didn't want you to touch. Pick it up, Hannah. Let's take a closer look at it.
Hannah picked up the key and flipped it over in her hand.
There's writing on this side, she said. It's marked Superior Storage, and there's a number on the other side. It looks like 312.
Let me see. Mike held out his hand, and Hannah gave him the key.
He turned it over in his hand, examining both sides.
You're right, Hannah. The 2 is a little worn, but it's definitely 312. This is a key to a storage unit.
Ross's storage unit?
Maybe. Either that or he was keeping it for someone. Do you know if he wrote a monthly check to a storage company?
No. Ross paid his own bills. But Doug can give us a printout of all the checks he wrote.
Hannah felt a rush of excitement so intense it almost made her dizzy. If we can locate his storage unit, there could be a clue to where Ross went. Mike smiled at her.
Yes, it's the first lead I've gotten in my search for him. Let me keep this key, Hannah, and I'll research it on the department computer.
Hannah was about to agree when she thought better of it.
No, I'll keep it. You've got the name of the storage facility and the number of the unit. I'll keep the key.
Why?
Because Ross is my husband, and he left that key for me. I want to be there if you locate it. I need to unlock it myself.
But... Okay, Mike agreed. If I find the unit, you can come along to open it.
Thanks, Hannah said, dropping the key in her pocket.
It might have been silly, but she felt as if she'd just won the lottery. She turned to look over at the safe deposit box again and frowned slightly.
I have one more question for you, Mike.
What is it?
What do you think I should do with this money right now?
You should put it back in the vault. But before you do that, I think we should call Doug in to witness what's inside Ross's box. You haven't touched anything inside, have you, Hannah?
No, I just touched the outside of the lid when I opened it.
Good. I want Doug to watch while I pick up one of the bundles and read off some of the serial numbers so you can copy them down for me. Then I'll put the bills back, and he can substantiate that.
Why?
Because I'll have to take money from the box to get the serial numbers. With Doug as a reliable witness, he can swear that I put the bills back if there's ever any question about that.
That makes sense. And once you get the serial numbers, you'll call your friend to see if he can find out anything for us?
Yes, that's my plan.
Okay. That all sounds reasonable to me. Do you want me to go and ask Doug to come in here?
No, I'll call him on my cell phone. I don't think that either one of us should leave the other in here alone.
And that's just in case the money is counterfeit or illegal in some other way?
Right. And then, when we're finished, I want Doug to watch while you put the box back
and lock it up.
Mike moved closer and gave her a little hug.
It can't hurt to err on the side of caution, especially since we really don't know what we're dealing with here.
Chapter 16. Hannah gave a little wave as Mike pulled away in his cruiser. Then she walked to the back door and stood there, wondering if she should go in. She had one more stop to make, and she didn't want to take Michelle with her. It could be difficult for Michelle to be objective, hearing Hannah ask questions of PK's co-workers. She turned and took a few steps toward her cookie truck, but then she reconsidered. It was always easier getting people to talk if she brought some sweet treat with her to break the ice. She needed cookies to serve in the television station's break room. Anything chocolate would be good. Chocolate seemed to calm people down and make them more willing to be candid with her. Hannah turned on her heel and reversed direction, walking quickly to the back door of the cookie jar. If luck was with her, everyone would be in the coffee shop, handling the noon rush. Cautiously, Hannah opened the door and peeked in. The kitchen was deserted. She rushed in, closing the door silently behind her, and went straight to the baker's rack, where 8 pans of chocolate cashew bar cookies were stacked, each on its own shelf. She hurried to cut a pan into brownie-sized pieces and place them on a platter. No more than 2 or 3 minutes later, she was stashing her platter in the back of the cookie truck and climbing behind the wheel. It started to snow as she pulled out of the alley, and Hannah sent up a little prayer that the snowflakes would remain light and sparse. She was really looking forward to dinner tonight at the Lake Eden Inn. Sally always had wonderful entrees, and breads, and sides, and desserts. Come to think of it, everything that Sally served was wonderful. There weren't many cars on the road, and Hannah made good time driving to KCOW Television's headquarters. The bar cookies she'd cut smelled enticing, and her stomach gave a hungry growl as she pulled into the multi-level parking structure. She had spent a busy morning baking, and she hadn't taken time for lunch. That meant she hadn't eaten anything since the breakfast that Michelle had made almost 8 hours ago, not counting the cookies she'd tasted with Norman. She parked in a spot marked for visitors, retrieved her platter of bar cookies, and got out of the truck to walk across the concrete floor to the back entrance. There was a buzzer by the back door, and Hannah pressed it. A moment later, a voice came over the intercom.
KCOW-TV, could I please have your name?
Betty? Hannah asked, recognizing the tinny voice that floated out of the speaker. Betty Jackson?
Yes. Hannah?
Yes. Are you working here now, Betty?
Yes, for a 3-month job, and if I'm lucky, the lady who went out on maternity leave will decide to stay home with her baby. It's her first, and her husband just got a promotion, so it could happen.
If it does, do you think that you'll get her job?
That's what I'm hoping. Did you come out here to see anyone in particular, Hannah?
Actually, no, I didn't. I just dropped by with some chocolate cashew bar cookies for your break room.
Right. Of course you did.
Even though the intercom didn't catch many vocal nuances, Hannah recognized sarcasm when she heard it. For a split second, she considered what she should do, and she decided to act as if she hadn't understood.
Whatever do you mean, Betty?
She asked in the most innocent voice she could muster. Betty laughed.
Don't play dumb with me, Hannah. Everybody knows that you're investigating. You always do.
Hannah decided that there was no reason not to admit it. You're right, Betty. Do you think anyone will talk to me?
Sure. No problem with that, Hannah. People like you, and that's all everybody out here has been talking about anyway. It's been the prime topic of conversation ever since it happened. There's even an office pool about when you'd get here to question us.
You're kidding. Hannah was shocked. As far as she knew, she'd never been the subject of an office pool before. You are joking, aren't you, Betty?
Got me there. But there could be an office pool for that. They've all been wondering when you'd get around to us. Hold on a second and I'll buzz you in. C- Come up the stairs and through the first door on your left. That'll take you right into the reception area, and that's where I am. I have to taste those treats you brought to make sure they're suitable for everyone else.
Hannah laughed, and a second or two later the buzzer sounded, and the lock on the door clicked as it released. She pulled the door open, stepped through, and started up the steps. When she got to the top, she found Betty Jackson, resplendent in a stretchy gold blouse that had extended as far as its fabric would allow, and black slacks that actually made her more than plump legs look thinner. "Hi, Betty," Hannah greeted her. "You look good. Have you lost weight?"
"Yes, 22 pounds. I'm on the onesie diet."
"What's that?"
"Eat what you want, but only eat one. It works as long as you don't count a whole boatload of mashed potatoes and gravy as one."
Hannah laughed. "Obviously you haven't done that. You really do look thinner, Betty. I noticed it right away."
"Thanks."
Betty looked pleased as she ushered Hannah down the hall. Hannah noticed that she glanced at the platter of bar cookies every now and then. It didn't take long for them to arrive at the break room door. Betty pushed it open, ushered Hannah inside, and motioned toward a table. "Would you like to taste one now?" Hannah asked her, already knowing the answer.
"Yes, but whatever you do, don't let me have more than one. I bought all new clothes, and they won't fit if I put any of that 22 pounds I lost back on."
"Okay, I won't let you have more than one," Hannah promised. "Do you want to eat it right now before anyone else comes in?"
"That's a real good idea."
Betty went to the coffee pot and poured 2 cups. She handed one to Hannah, and once she'd added low-calorie sweetener to hers, she sat down across the table and watched expectantly as Hannah removed the foil wrap from the platter. "Here, Betty." Hannah picked up one bar cookie with a napkin from the dispenser on the table and handed it to Betty. "Let me know how you like them."
"My pleasure,"
Betty responded, taking a bite. A moment later, a rapturous expression spread over her face, and she was smiling as she swallowed.
"Oh, my," she breathed. "Everything you bake is great, but these are pure heaven."
"Thanks. I'm glad you like them." Hannah unfolded another napkin and draped it over the platter, effectively hiding the bar cookies from Betty's sight.
"Smart," Betty said, reacting to Hannah's action. "Who would you like to see first, Hannah? Part of my job is covering for people when they go on break, and I'll tell the person you choose to take a break now."
"I'm not sure who to choose. Will you recommend someone for me?"
"That's easy. Talk to Scotty McDonald first."
"All right, but tell me why I should do that."
"Because there was bad blood between Scotty and PK. Everybody could see that. I think it was jealousy."
"Why would Scotty be jealous of PK?"
"Scotty's been here longer than PK has, and Scotty was sure he'd get the job as head cameraman. It was a real surprise to everyone when PK got it instead. Scotty was mad about that, but he got even madder when Ross chose PK to be his assistant."
"And Scotty thought that he should have been Ross's assistant?"
"Yes. At least that's what everyone says."
"Were you working out here then, Betty?"
"No, not when PK got the head cameraman position. But people talk, and I heard all about it from more than one person. When Scotty got passed over for the promotion, he started to resent the heck out of PK."
"But you weren't actually here then."
"No, but I was here when Ross took the job as head of special programming. And I saw what happened when Ross and PK went out to the Lake Eden Inn to cover the Food Network Dessert Chef competition."
"Scotty felt he should have gone with Ross instead?"
"I'll say. And it burned him even more when Ross went out on location with that special job they gave him a couple of weeks ago, and PK started using Ross's office. Every time Scotty went past the door, he glared at PK just like he wanted to kill him."
"Do you think Scotty actually did?" Betty looked stunned by that question.
"I didn't exactly mean it like that," she tried to explain. "But to tell the truth, I don't know. I don't think it went that far, but I can tell you that Scotty criticized PK every chance he got. He didn't even warm up to PK's girlfriend, and she was as sweet could be.
Then you knew PK's girlfriend?
Not well, but I met her a couple of times. She used to drive out to pick up PK so they could go to dinner.
In her pink Jeep? Hannah asked, remembering what Cyril had told her.
Yes,
Betty laughed.
Silliest thing I ever saw, but that girl loved her pink Jeep. She even found pink and white seat covers for the bucket seats. And PK gave her one of those vanity license plates that said Pinky on it.
Do you happen to know Pinky's real name? Hannah asked. Betty thought about that for a moment, and then she shook her head.
I don't think I ever heard it. PK always called her Pinky, and so did everyone else.
How about Pinky's last name? Betty shook her head again.
No, but maybe Carol would know. When I send her back to try one of your yummy bar cookies, you can ask her.
Were Carol and Pinky friends?
Not really, but Carol knows everything about everybody. She's been here from the beginning, and she's a walking encyclopedia of facts about the employees and their visitors. And even better, she doesn't mind telling anyone who'll listen.
Can you send Carol in first? Hannah asked.
Sure. But why?
Because she can tell me about everyone else, and then I'll know what to ask them.
Makes sense to me, Betty said, rising from her chair. Okay, Hannah. Carol first, then Scotty.
Hannah waited until Betty left, and then she removed the napkin from the platter. She attempted to think of the questions she wanted to ask Carol, and then she decided that it was better to simply let Carol talk about PK's murder. Betty had promised that Carol wouldn't mind talking to anyone who would listen, and she was a good listener. Hannah sipped her coffee as she waited. She really ought to tell Carol about the phone tree that Dolores had established, the one Hannah and her sisters called the Lake Eden Gossip Hotline. Their mother could use someone like Carol as a resource. 20 minutes later, Hannah turned to a blank page in the stenographer's notebook she referred to as her murder book and waited for Scotty to arrive. Carol hadn't known Pinky's real name, but she'd been delighted to tell Hannah everything about everyone else who worked at KCOW television. Carol had been sure that an employee named Martha might have wanted to kill PK at one time. She said that PK had dated Martha once, and then he hadn't asked her out again. According to Carol, Martha had been devastated by PK's apparent disinterest, and she'd said several times that someone ought to show him what happened to a man who broke a woman's heart. Hannah had written all this down dutifully, but then Carol had uprooted the suspicion that had been planted in Hannah's mind. She'd said that Martha was engaged now, and everyone in the office, including PK, had received invitations to the wedding. There had been other employees, guests, and bosses that Carol had mentioned, but none of them had possessed a compelling reason to kill PK. Even though Carol had been very forthcoming with the gossip she'd heard about everyone, nothing she'd said about anyone had convinced Hannah to add any of them to her suspect list.
Hi, Hannah!
Betty appeared in the doorway.
Here's Scotty. Give him a couple of those incredible bar cookies, will you? I don't dare even look at them, or I'll leap across the table, grab the platter, and run to the nearest office with a door I can lock.
Scotty laughed, and Hannah could tell that he liked Betty.
And you'll eat every single one before anyone can unlock the door with the master key?
You got it,
Betty said with a nod.
Well, I won't stand in your way as long as you leave at least 5 for me, Scotty told her.
When Betty left, Scotty stopped smiling and faced Hannah squarely.
I know what you want, and you're barking up the wrong tree if you think that I had anything to do with what happened to PK.
But you didn't like PK, did you, Scotty? Hannah asked as she passed the platter of bar cookies to him.
Not at first, no. But then we got to talking, and once I figured out what was going on, I liked him just fine.
Scotty took a bar cookie from the platter and grabbed a napkin from the dispenser.
It's like this, Hannah. I just thought I got a raw deal from the bosses. I've been a cameraman here since KCOW television went on the air. and I know that I'm a better cameraman than PK is."
He stopped speaking and frowned.
"Then PK was," he corrected himself. "Sorry, but it still doesn't seem real, you know. I keep waiting for him to come in every morning, and he doesn't."
Hannah watched while Scotty took a sip of his coffee, gave a sigh, and blinked several times.
"It just doesn't seem real," he repeated.
"I know," Hannah said, echoing his sigh.
"Is it always like this?" Scotty asked.
"I think it is."
"It's like you turn around and somebody's not there anymore because something awful happened to them."
Scotty took another swallow of his coffee, and then he bit into one of Hannah's creations.
"These are good," he said.
"Thank you." Hannah accepted the compliment, but she wasn't about to let Scotty sidetrack their conversation. "You seem to have given people the impression that you didn't like PK, and now you're telling me that you did?" Scotty shook his head.
"I didn't always like him, but I did after I found out that it wasn't PK's fault he got the head cameraman job instead of me. Then I was okay with it. As a matter of fact, we had a drink together after work. Last Wednesday."
"You did?" Hannah frowned slightly. "Was Betty wrong about the animosity between Scotty and PK? Where did you go?"
"Out to the bar at the Lake Eden Inn. Dick makes his pizza dip on Wednesdays, and PK was crazy about it. We went there for an hour or so, and both of us had a couple of drinks."
Hannah was puzzled. Michelle had mentioned that PK didn't drink, and Cyril had said the same thing. "I thought PK didn't drink."
"He didn't. He told me he cracked up his dad's car when he was a teenager, and he was just lucky he didn't get a DUI. He said he hasn't had a drop to drink since then."
"But he went out to Dick's bar."
"Yeah, but that was for the pizza dip. I told you before he was really crazy about it. I had a couple of beers, but PK stuck to Cokes with lime in them. Dick calls those virgin Cuba Libres because real Cuba Libres have rum in them, and he leaves out the rum for PK."
Hannah made a mental note to check that out and went on with her questioning. "So you were on friendly terms with PK?"
"I wouldn't go quite that far. We sure weren't best buds or anything like that. But I know he didn't cozy up to the bosses to get that promotion. As a matter of fact, he was just as surprised as I was."
"Really?"
"Yeah. He talked to me about it right after it happened, and he told me he didn't apply for it or anything like that."
"And you believed him?"
"Yeah. PK's always been a straight shooter."
"But you resented the fact that PK moved up to be Ross's assistant?"
"No, not that. I didn't want that job."
"Why not?" Scotty looked a bit surprised at the question.
"It's the hours. You're always on call. And it's the travel. Maybe if I'd been younger, I would have wanted it, but living out of a suitcase isn't for me. I resented the fact PK moved into that office, but that's it."
Hannah decided to be perfectly sincere. "I talked to two people here, and they both said you looked really angry every time you went past Ross's office and saw PK sitting there."
"That's true, but it was envy. That's a great office. It's cool in the summer and warm in the winter, and it's got a great view. I'm stuck in the back in a cubbyhole with one little window so high I can't see out of it."
"Did you resent Ross when he got that office?"
"No. Ross was hired as an executive, and that's an executive office. But PK isn't. I know he's just using it while Ross is gone, but it still ticked me off when I saw him in there."
"Did you and PK ever discuss it?"
"Yeah, and that made me feel a little better about it. PK offered to share it with me until Ross came back."
"Did you take PK up on that?" Hannah asked.
"No. The fact that he offered counted for something. And to tell the truth, neither one of us knew when Ross would be back, and I didn't want to move all my stuff in there and then have to move it all back."
"I understand," Hannah said. And she did. Scotty began to frown.
"Ross is coming back, isn't he, Hannah?
Hannah scrambled for an answer. She didn't want to lie about it, but neither did she want to admit that she really didn't know. Then the perfect response popped into her head, and she gave a little smile. I'm not sure how you feel about it, but it can't be